Rachel Kushner. Rachel Kushner is one of our most entertaining and exciting contemporary writers. She is a two-time National Book Award finalist. Rachel's latest novel is called Creation Lake. It's already been longlisted for the Booker Prize. She's no stranger to that. Her second novel, The Mars Room, was shortlisted for the Booker Prize when it was released. Creation Lake follows an attractive spy named Sadie as she attempts to infiltrate a French revolutionary group in rural France. Rachel has combined elements of both genre and literary fiction, and she's turned it into one heck of a story. One reviewer described Creation Lake as a reinvention of the spy novel. Hard to argue that. Rachel joins us now to talk about Creation Lake and how the French crime novelist Jean-Patrick Manchette may have unlocked it for her.
I don't write in genre normally and would not call this book exactly a contribution to genre, but the narrator, Sadie, is herself sort of like a visitor from the world of genre into a more literary landscape, perhaps, if you will. She is working undercover. She used to work for the feds in the US, was fired, is hired by, or kind of retreats into this shadowy world of private interests and is surveilling this group. And I feel like it was Manchette who gave me permission to kind of bestow her with some of the mood characteristics and also just the pragmatic tricks of the trade. And without reading him, I don't think I would have been as interested in doing that because he just made it look so fun.
Very well said. Yeah. You have said that your protagonist, Sadie Smith, has all the qualities that you think you don't have. How so?
Well, I mean, if you just go through the list, you know, she is somebody who I see as her creator. I see her as somebody who moves into a room, sees other people in the room, and presumes herself to be one step ahead or several steps ahead of everyone else. And she's not looking to them for cues on how to proceed, ever. She only looks to herself. She thinks that she is kind of all powerful in her ability to dissimulate and manipulate other people in order to control outcomes. And I'm not like that at all. I wouldn't want to control outcomes, but I also, it's just not my natural disposition, which is to try to wonder, ascertain, divine what other people are thinking. And not just about everything, but also about me. Like, I'm looking to them for cues on how to proceed because I project onto them full consciousness that is a world I can't entirely know, but might learn something from. Whereas I don't think Sadie really thinks she's going to learn much from other people. People are tools to her, at least in the earlier parts of the book. And so I just don't have that kind of confidence, nor would I really want it. But I will say that, like, occupying her disposition for the duration of the book was very fun and different and new for me. And it kind of felt like climbing into a tank, you know, because she's so defended from the world in a way that I'm not, and nor would I want to be. But in for this particular structure, it made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whenever I came across the Bruno Lacombe character, I kept thinking of the late French philosopher and anthropologist Bruno Latour. Is there a connection between the two in your mind?
None whatsoever. I've never read Bruno Latour. I mean, Bruno Lacombe is invented, but he brings together for me streams of a type of real person that would have had their formation as a child of World War II, who then was on the streets of Paris after the war. Then he hooks up with Guy Debord, who is obviously a real person. And that's the fun thing about fiction, is I could just make Bruno, you know, a young confidant of Guy Debord's. And Debord has erudition and learning and reads books. And Bruno Lacombe at that time is an urchin on the streets who drinks and steals, and he's an orphan. after the war, which many were, and Guy Debord did hang out with these young people who were kind of like street orphans. There was one named Jean-Michel Mancion, who wrote an incredibly mysterious memoir called The Tribe that was published by City Lights. And I love that book so much. And I did, truth be told, borrow a few details for my Bruno Lacombe. But his like later iteration of being sort of anti-civilization and living in a cave, that's invented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The leader of Le Moulin is Pascal Balmian. He seems to be the second coming of the French theorist Guy Debord. How did Debord's work influence Creation Lake?
Debord is a fascinating character to me. He is an incredible writer and a genius rhetorician. And he was able to sort of humiliate all of what would have been considered France's great achievements in the, the 30 glorious years after the end of World War II. And, he points out the contradictions of French society and all capitalist society in his sort of masterwork, Society of the Spectacle, which is also a film. I find all of his films really interesting. One thing about Debord is that, he's very charismatic. He's mysterious. And he did not foment revolution in France. Instead, he merely became famous. And I sort of position my fictional character, Pascal Balmy, as having a lot of the mystique and the charisma and the rhetorical force and the vision of a Guy Debord. But he's not an alcoholic who's going to drink himself to death, which is what Debord did. And he has no appetite for fame. So he's seen by the sort of older set, including Bruno, as having a lot of promise, as being kind of like a new iteration of Debord, but without the weaknesses of Debord, without being marked by Debord's downfall.
Hmm. Yeah. There's a minor character in your novel named Michel Thomas. Michel is a novelist. Is this based on the real-life linguist?
Linguist?
Yeah.
I don't know who that is, but...
Okay.
But I'm glad that you asked, because Michel Thomas is the birth name of Michel Houellebecq, who is the most famous living French novelist.
Yeah, Lovecraft's book. He's written all kinds of controversial books, a book about Lovecraft that I've read, and I forget, all kinds of books, hasn't he?
Well, his novels are the thing he's most known for. He did write that Lovecraft book. But he wrote a novel called Serotonin that I think is absolutely hilarious. I know that he has a reputation as a kind of scoundrel. He's a controversial figure, maybe more so in France than in the US. But I think he's a genius and he's incredibly funny. And I really love some of his novels. And when I was first trying to work on this book, I was talking to a friend of mine, and Serotonin had just come out. And I started to read it. And Serotonin is about a depressed agronomist who goes to visit a friend and discovers this world where the French farmers are committing suicide over the price of milk and there's a pitched battle. And I thought, oh no, I'm trying to write this book and Houellebecq has already done it. And my friend said, just put him in your novel. So that's what I did. And I'm really glad you asked about that. Not a lot of people have noticed, but maybe you just knew in your second mind to ask. So yeah, and at first I just called him Houellebecq, and my husband said, call him by Houellebecq's given name, which is known in France, but not so much in the US. So that's who it is. And maybe I poke fun at him, but there's also a lot of love there, which I hope is clear, because Houellebecq has that kind of, he's always on the scene of the crime. He had a meeting at the offices of Charlie Hebdo on the day of the assassination of Charlie Hebdo's staff. And he had written his novel Submission, which is about this party, Muslim party in France taking over. And it could be argued that Houellebecq has some problematic attitudes, but separate from that, in terms of his earlier novels, and also Submission as a novel that I like. I'm interested in him. So that was my version of Welbeck in the book.
Right. Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. So what is your favorite Welbeck novel? Is it Serotonin? Probably.
Yes.
Not.
Yeah. No, I think it's, yeah, Serotonin.
Okay. I got to check that out. Yeah.
But Elementary Particles is pretty good too.
Okay. Thank you for the recommendations. Michelle is described during the chaotic climax as simply just observing. Was this a possible insight into how you work as a writer?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun to put a writer on the scene at this agricultural fair, you know, and have Sadie be the person who's describing everybody, because she always sort of emphasizes them in the most negative light possible. And he's walking around kind of sniffing the air, looking for detail to put into his work. So that is an orientation toward reality that's deeply familiar to me. So maybe if I'm making fun of him in that scene, or if she is, it's really about me making fun of myself. And I think it's followed by a comment of hers about posterity. Like, she says something to the effect of, you know, while the rest of us dissolve into nothingness, he's looking to inscribe himself into them, some, you know, eternal record, which is to some degree maybe what writers are hoping to do. I don't know. I've never thought about it that explicitly. It's always novels where you have a chance to kind of look at things and render them in language when they're not about you and your own relationship to the world.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. One of my favorite things about Sadie is when a character says something to her and she thinks of a response but doesn't say it out loud. Is this a technique that you ever use in real life?
No.
I didn't think so. I thought I'd ask.
I'm not like, stifling mean observations about people, but it became a technique for developing the voice for the reader, because it was meant to seem as though, and it did seem to me, because I am the first reader, you know, she's addressing me as the reader. It seemed that she almost is like Janus faced, like she's turned toward the people in the book, the world of the book. And then she can pause and turn to the reader. And the reader gets to see her as in two points of reality. Her in terms of what she's thinking, since they have privy to her thoughts. And then what she's telling the people around her. And then it was just kind of a fun technical challenge for me to keep that going without too much clunkiness. Like, so sometimes it's just, you know, blah, 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 I didn't say. Which is her way of sharing a thought with the reader, but then also telling the reader that she didn't say that.
Okay, thank you. That was a great answer. I was worried about asking that question because I was dwelling too much on the, you know, wanting people to like, okay, good. And great answer, even better answer. Creation Lake was nominated for the Man Booker Prize. You're no stranger to these prestigious lists. Are these nominations important to you?
I don't want to sound ungrateful and say no, but the things that are most important to me in the world are art and love, and nothing else matters. And the things that I regard as important in terms of like desires, things I would want, things I'd want to pursue, are always exclusively things over which I have some degree of control. Prizes and that kind of thing, that sort of critical accolade, that just comes out of the ether. And I would never want something I have no control over getting, you know. That said, yeah, I was shortlisted for the Booker Prize for The Mars Room. And that was very exciting because you can see how important it is to the UK publisher. It's very prestigious for them. And also just as a social experience, it's curious and interesting. You go for the ceremony at Guildhall in London, and all of the, I think they're called the shields for the guilds, are up on the walls. And so you could see each guild, you know, like my cousin is a blacksmith and there was a blacksmithing guild up on the wall near my table. And just that was neat. And they made a big deal about meeting this person called the Duchess of Cornbread. I didn't know who she was, but I, you know, you shake her hand and it's all very ritualized. I thought it was neat, but then I decided that it was really neat. And the reason was that it was in the newspapers, that like the New York Times, and I was getting messages from relatives and friends who don't really pay attention to the literary world, but read the paper and saw that there, and they were really excited. And then I thought that that was a really pleasurable thing if it was bringing pleasure to other people and getting people excited. So super lucky.
Yeah, super lucky, but you've earned it. You're an excellent writer, and you've done a lot of work to accomplish all this. Rachel Kushner, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Creation Lake. I can't wait to read your next book.
Thank you so much. And it's wonderful to be back in conversation with you. Thanks for having me on the program again.
Rachel Kushner is a 2-time National Book Award finalist and the author of Creation Lake. Find out more about Rachel and Creation Lake at WPR.org/beta.
He made a recording of himself playing trumpet on his balcony while bombs were falling.
Coming up in just a moment, Sam Green joins us to talk about his documentary, 32 Sounds, Exploring the Audio World. It changed the way he thinks about sound, and it might just have the same impact on you. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.